So this is one of the longer commentary sections in John's Gospel. So going all the way back, and I had to confirm it just by looking at the Bible just to be sure, that we're still in the section where Jesus is making commentary on the bread of life discourse. So we had, if you remember, Jesus multiplies the bread and the loaves, then he walks on the sea, then he explains with the bread of life discourse when he explains how the bread works. Now they're kind of in that whole phase about what it's like to wander in the wilderness. So there's that second element of Israel's history, which is that experience of having no land, no temple, nothing, just living in a tent and daily living on God's providence. And so you get, of course, the lectionary attaches this to the book of Numbers. And what I find really funny about the passage from the book of Numbers is both between God and the people and poor Moses stuck in between, there's a certain communication impasse. And you can't always take certain things at face value. So most of all, you hear the people grumbling. And on one level, you can kind of sympathize for them. It's like, yes, God took us out of the... took us out of our comfortable servitude and slavery. And it sounds paradoxical for people to be comforted in slavery, but sometimes people just like the comfort of knowing where everything is. If you're a slave, life is pretty simple. It's like being in high school. You know what your assignments are, you know what your job is, you know where you're going, you know how things are going to work out, generally speaking. It's when you're thrown into the complexity of actually being a responsible, free person, that's kind of dangerous. So sometimes people like to go back to the comfort of being told what to do, of being, even though if it means being abused and all sorts of other horrible things, people like that for some strange reason. But then when they say, we are hungry and we are starving and you haven't given us anything to eat, we kind of think, wait a second. And then there comes the kicker. We detest this horrible food. So much like the high school kid that says, I'm starving, I'm starving, I'm starving. Then you say, here's dinner. And then they'll say, no, I don't want that. I want something else. That is gives you, in a sense, kind of a glimpse of the frustration that is now going on between with Moses and God over the people. How do you appease these people? The fact is, you can't. The moment of this wandering teaches the people of Israel, in a sense, their naked self. We can convince ourselves of our own virtue in peacetime and in wealth and in plenty because we haven't actually been challenged. When we are just kind of coasting along and life is good, it's pretty easy to convince ourselves we're good people. But when you're desperate, that's when you kind of start seeing the real heart of a person. So when we're stressed out, yes, of course, we are a bit nastier than we would be if we were not stressed out. But that might actually be a glimpse of the more raw, unrefined personality that we happen to have. The second portion, which is interesting, is then, of course, the serpents show up. They start biting people, and then people die. And then the stubborn people realize, oh, wait a second, cause and effect, complaint, criticism, da-da-da-da-da, now we are being punished. So then they pray. You know, so this is an interesting thing, because generally a good parent doesn't really want to punish. They would just love to be able to say to their kids, don't do that. And then the kids would say, okay, I won't. Doesn't always work that way. So you often wind up with this whole retributive punishment thing where you have to give them negative reinforcement for bad behavior. So then they have this moment where the serpents start biting people and they die. Now their petition is, take the serpents away. God doesn't do that. He instructs Moses to put a serpent on the top of a pole so that when they look at it, then they will be healed. It's a very different thing. Now, believe it or not, this is exactly a parallel to what God has done for us in Jesus. In fact, Jesus makes reference to this one serpent on the pole event twice, once in the third chapter with Nicodemus, and now. Just as the serpent was lifted up in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up, and all those who believe in him will find life, and he goes on and on and on and on and on. And he does the same thing today. God does not take us away from the world in which we live. He does not take us away from the sufferings and the serpents. He gives us a means or a goal to look at to find healing. Because the whole problem is not just to simply stay contented in the wilderness. It's to find your end goal. And now Jesus shares his end with us. He tells them in no uncertain terms that his promised land is his Father's house. And we will never actually really know where we're going until we know that that is our goal. And the funny thing about the wanderings of the people of Israel is that sometimes scholars, you can't actually chronologically map out from beginning to end where the Israelites wandered. But generally speaking, it doesn't take 40 years to wander from the Red Sea to Palestine. It doesn't take that long. What happens is they go like this. But it doesn't even happen like that. It goes. Here's, we're right on the cusp of the promised land, and they're like, nah, we don't like it. Okay. And then finally they get there, and then you have a bunch of guys going across and they scout the whole area, and I'm pretty sure you've all experienced this guy. They go in, they find the promised land, they look inside of it, and then the scout goes, this is really a nice place. The grapes are amazing, but it's too dangerous. Let's just keep doing the... It's a grand tragedy that in so many ways, the human heart is accustomed to slavery. And God is trying to set us free by actually adopting us into a free household. For ancient peoples, this is something much more ready to their imaginations than for ourselves. That the only way in which one can truly be free in the ancient world, in where people have the structures of power, where if you're under somebody, economically, socially, whatever, you are only free insofar as they allow you to be free. So the only free people are the sons and daughters of a king. And even they, not quite free in the way we would think. That they are bound to that family, but at the same time, that family offers them freedom. And this is the family that Jesus is binding us to through our baptism. It's a family that transcends our expectations. Jesus has the exact same frustration with the people of Israel that Moses had with the people of Israel. They couldn't quite understand where he was leading them. They couldn't quite understand the purpose that for which he has been sent. Yesterday, we went through that long discourse where Jesus basically says, you neither know me nor my Father. If you knew me, you would know my Father also. It's an amazing thing that God gives us so much, and yet we are so reluctant to accept it. Now, the slave metaphor is pretty ready, and that it is kind of helpful to understand and have the experience of a person who is offered everything, and yet somehow we're reluctant. Now, I also think, though, that there's something that needs to be stated, that very often we also know from our experience in the world that when somebody offers us something that is too good to be true, well, it usually is. If that construction project just seems to be too inexpensive, if that job seems to be just too lucrative, if that friend just appears to be too cool, and if these relationships just seem to be too awesome, our first thought is, what's the catch? What's the catch? And it's really hard to deprogram ourselves with that experience in relationship to God. And that is why Jesus puts himself on the top of the pole. The only way that we can truly know with confidence that when Jesus tells us, please, follow me. I know it's going to be difficult. I know you're going to feel starved. I know you're going to feel really isolated and alone. But how about I do it first, so you at least know I'm not lying to you? Now that is something all the shyster advertisers will never do. And most especially, the Father has raised him up. Before, it was almost impossible, it was impossible to know the Father. But once we encounter the risen Jesus, the promised land is no longer simply on the other side of the water that we have to miraculously cross. The promised land comes to us.